The Stein Online Clubland Q&A begins right now.
Hey, welcome along. This is Mark Stein, live around the planet with another one of our Clubland Q&As. It is 11 a.m. North American Eastern Time. Sorry about that. I just dropped something on the floor if I wandered off mic there, just had to bend down and pick it up. But I will take questions from the floor, as well as those you submit via our comment form and all the other things. 11 a.m. North America. I know there are some people who loathe the recitation of the time zones, but in a turbulent world, it is one of the few constants. 11 a.m. North American Eastern Time, midday in the beautiful Canadian Maritimes, half past noon in Newfoundland and Labrador. It is 4 p.m. in London and Dublin, 5 p.m. in Paris and Berlin, 6 p.m. in Cairo and Jerusalem, 7 p.m. in the Trucial States, as I still think of them, and 7:30 p.m. in Kabul. Because after enduring the pronunciation of Kabul for the past 20 years, we're now going back to the way it should be pronounced. Kabul, a special greetings to all of you in Kabul. Love you guys on the half-hour time zones and any Newfoundlanders who move to Kabul, because you only move to places that have half-hour time zones. I will be delighted to hear from you. Lots going on in the world. I was cranky last week, And a lot of you didn't care for it because I was yelling. I was yelling a lot. And I was just trying to sound more like some of the big names in American talk radio. They like to do a bit of strategic yelling now and then. But a lot of you didn't care for it, thought I was just cranky. The kids complained. Grandma complained. So we're going to try. I might just be down and depressed today. Just generally blue. As ABBA said in, what was that song, that ABBA song with the big, I must have had my second cigarette at 2:30, and at the time I never even noticed I was blue. The Day Before You Came, ABBA. What a great record. Let's go to the first question. This is from Stefan Erle, who is a Frenchman living in Hong Kong. That's what they mean, one country, two systems. Hong Kong's part of China, but they still have Frenchmen there. That is one country, two systems. Hi, Mark. What do you make of the fact that Australia has torn the large submarine contract it had signed with France and switched to American submarines? This may be seen as a victory for the US military industry and US jobs, but it comes at the cost of really angering the French. This comes just 1 month after angering all its NATO partners by leaving Afghanistan without coordination. Coordination is a bit of a euphemism there, Stefan. They basically just folded their tents, just like the Arabs. Although not the Arabs in Afghanistan, they all stuck around. But the Americans folded their tents instead of the Arabs and skulked off in the middle of the night without telling their allies. And Stefan continues, and since France is one of the few Western armies that is still able to fight wars, see Mali. You can't see Mali, Stefan, because that was such a successful war, it didn't make the American newspapers. So no American knows what you're on about there. Why screw one of your closest allies, says Stefan, especially with a friendly Macron as president? The French foreign minister is so upset. He said that breaking the contract is something that looks like something Trump would do. Yes, it's been very interesting to watch, starting with the foreign minister, the remarks of French officials who basically said, wait a minute, we all supported Biden precisely because we didn't want this kind of erratic, unpredictable, out-of-the-blue Trump-like behaviour. And what's going on? Being compared to Trump, says Stefan Erle, shows how low Biden is now perceived. A signed contract used to have the force of law and mean something in the English world. This is a complete disregard for contracts and partners. And I'm not saying this as a French anti-American. I'm pro-America and I'm with you 99% of the time. But now I'm living in Taiwan and I have the feeling it won't be long until Biden's America will screw me. For good, maybe. Oh, yeah, that's right. Did I see you in Hong Kong? No, you're in Taiwan. That's true. So you're a degree safer than I said, Stefan. I do apologise for getting you mixed up with all that one country two systems thing. You're actually in Taiwan, living the life, and you're wondering how long you're going to be able to live the life in the post-American world. Just to be clear what Stefan is referring to here, because I haven't actually seen any coverage of this in the American media, but there's a new security alliance in town. It's called AUKUS. And that stands for Australia, United Kingdom, United States. And it's a bit, basically a new Indo-Pacific security alliance, one consequence of which is that the Royal Australian Navy will now become the seventh navy on the face of the earth to have nuclear-powered submarines. It doesn't mean they're carrying nuclear weapons. It just means they're going to be nuclear powered, which means they can stay underwater a lot longer. Now, that's not a big problem if you're, say, a Northern European power and you just need your subs to tootle around the Baltic, or what do they call it in Germany? The Ostsee? And you're just like messing around in the North Sea and the Baltic and so forth. But if you're in the Indian Ocean and the Pacific Ocean, it's helpful not to have to come up and surface while you travel long distances. Now, so they're going to be, there's this new security partnership, AUKUS. It's got a name. It's an acronym. So it's got a bureaucracy. So it's been in the works since before the Americans decided to abandon the Bagram Air Base. I don't know. I would guess the planning for this goes back to the Trump administration. But the calculation here, Stefan, since you're in Taiwan, is that it's basically being driven by the strategic imbalance that has arisen in the Indian Ocean and the Pacific Ocean. Until the 1960s, the Indian Ocean was a British lake and the Pacific Ocean was an American lake. And now they're both becoming pretty much Chinese lakes. And that's of particular concern if you're Australia. And as I mentioned before, I think on this show, the Australian Foreign Minister and I had a long talk a few years back about Chinese subversion of Commonwealth islands in the Pacific that basically had been decolonized in the 70s and 80s and were all being subverted by the Chinese. Now, you're mad, as the French are mad, Stefan, because of this reneging on their deal for conventional non-nuclear submarines that were going to be built basically by a nationalized or government-controlled French company. You're right in what you say. France is one of the few Western armies that is still able to fight wars. I don't think there's anything more pathetic now than American jokes about how crap the French are. Oh, why did they put trees along the Champs-Élysées? Oh, so the Germans can march in the shade. Going to war without the French is like going hunting without your accordion. Well, as Stefan points out, in Mali, which was whatever it was now, 4, 5, 6 years ago, the French actually went in, solved the problem, and got out without it making the American newspapers. It was such a boringly effective military action that no Americans have heard about it. And they didn't do it with the old shock and awe. They did it with absolutely minimal forces, as I recall. I think it was something like 6 fighter jets and a couple of companies of soldiers, 2 dozen paratroopers, whatever. Well, they did it with absolutely minimal forces, won the war, got out. I'm sick of all these stupid rah-rah, you know, the pom-pom girls of the American right. Those jokes about going to war without the French is like going hunting without your accordion. Right now, after what happened in Afghanistan, I'm going to try hunting with my accordion. It's when deer season starts, I'm going to go hunting with my... I don't think they have an accordion season in New Hampshire, but I'm going to give it a go. I got, your bow hunters and all the rest of it. I'm going to try hunting with my accordion this year. That's how demoralized I am by the American way of war. The the interesting thing here is that it's not really a problem of Franco-Australian relations. This clearly what happened. You're talking about jobs in the US and the military-industrial complex. As I understand it, the Royal Australian Navy will now have nuclear-powered submarines that will be built in Australia with UK, US assistance. I don't know what that means. I take it there's going to be... These are expensive submarines to build. The Americans only build two of these submarines every year. So I take it there are economies of scale. And I think, in fact, if I remember correctly, it was whatever it was in the 50s, that it was the Americans who actually shared this technology with UK in the first place. So the idea, I suppose, is that there's going to be economies of scale and that the US and the UK have both agreed to help turn the Royal Australian Navy into, as I said, the seventh Navy with nuclear-powered submarines. And in so doing, they've screwed over the French. I think it's important to remember here that it's the Yanks who screwed over the French. So that the problem here is Monsieur Macron got on well with Trump. And I think Trump, if he'd been minded to do this, would have given Macron a heads up about this because they got on. They liked each other. But unfortunately, Macron allowed himself to be steamrolled into this good riddance Trump, hello, Biden type stuff. And now we're in the present situation. But the question to me is, I don't like the way it's got an acronym, this thing, AUKUS, A-U-K-U-S, because that means it's got a bureaucracy, that means it's got bureaucrats. So it might just become as inert and useless as all the other acronyms have proved in the modern world. It might also be that this is the post... If you look at... The post-1950 American security alliances in the Pacific, they've all been falling apart. The Five Eyes is now down to Three Eyes, and it's these Three Eyes, not New Zealand, not Canada, it's Australia, America, Britain, who've come together and done this. And if you look at the ANZUS alliance, New Zealand is not part of that anymore. So that this AUKUS thing may be seen as a successor in a certain way to both the Five Eyes and to ANZUS. And whether it's a serious attempt to contain China, China has basically taken over the entire Indian Ocean, all the great ports. I mentioned this on Indian telly in Delhi. I always like to do telly in Delhi. And I mentioned this on Indian TV a week or two back, that China now basically has refurbished and controls all of Britain's old Indian Ocean ports between China and the Middle East. And so whether it's actually too late to turn this thing back, I don't know. I don't know whether this is serious or just for show. I do know that at the Zoom press conference with Biden, Boris Johnson, who is Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, and Biden remembered Boris's name, he did not remember the name of the Australian Prime Minister, and he could only refer to him as that fella down under. So this is looms so large in Biden's mind, whatever remains of Biden's mind, that he couldn't remember the name of his vital security partner in the Pacific. What's the name of that guy in Australia? The fellow down under. What's his actual name? Scott Morrison? Are you sure about that? Huh. Anyway, that's so much for that. The thing about this is, it's being presented. It's there because of what China's doing. Now, is it there seriously to reverse what China's doing or to give Sinophobes the impression that something is being done about China? I don't know, but I thought it was the most interesting development of the developments of the day. Let us see what else we got going on here. Your questions. You don't have to be a Mark Stein Club member, by the way, to listen to the show. Any of the 7 billion people around the planet can listen to the show, but you do have to be a Stein Online Club member to ask a question. Johnny B says, "Hi, Mark. I'll take a week off from discussing what Churchill referred to as the dreary steeples of Fermanagh and Tyrone." Yes, the Irish question. Fermanagh and Tyrone. Churchill actually loved Ireland. He doesn't have a great reputation, at least down south in Ireland. But in fact, he wrote a sort of imaginary letter to his deceased father, in Lord Randolph Churchill, in the late 1940s, bringing him up to speed with what had happened. And there was a rather poignant thing about Ireland being a little bit in and a little bit out of the empire. He loved Ireland, though. Anyway, your prediction about the California recall election has come true, with Newsom strolling to victory. Unlike Biden's victory, Newsom's was apparently called within minutes of the polls closing. Apparently a factor in this was the remote accessible vote-by-mail system, which allows voters to print off ballots in the privacy of their own homes. What, as they say, could possibly go wrong? You're making a disturbing habit of predicting outcomes. Will anything be done to stop the Democrat vote printing machine? And if not, will Republicans ever win again? Yeah, Democrats are putting in place here a system which enables them to win every election. And if you question that, you're just damaging democracy. Now, obviously, if they do win every election, it starts to look a bit suspicious. So every once in a while, they're going to let some Republican win. What kind of Republicans are they going to let win? Well, it's going to be useless Republicans. They're certainly not going to let Trump Republicans win. They'll let Susan Collins-type Republicans win. But they're basically in a situation now where they've developed a voting system that ensures that they can't lose, which is disturbing. And people reading the tea leaves about now. I'm not a big since what happened in November and the aftermath of that, I listen to a lot less talk radio than I used to, because it's not there for me really on the big picture things that are most important to me. I like, sometimes there are people who have enough sort of wit and that you just enjoy listening to them. I enjoy listening to Harry Carr, who's very big in New England. But I've given up on a lot of talk radio, because it seems to me it's seeing all the kinds of trees and not the forest. I mean, that's why in Californian terms, to take that example, since we're talking about California, for example, you have a thing called the French Laundry, which is a big fancy restaurant. And we saw this guy, Newsom, dining with lobbyists at the French Laundry. And people, and so he's not obeying his own mask mandates. Basically, the mask mandates are for you losers, but for the ruling class, life goes on. Dinner at the French Laundry. The French Laundry is a tree. It's a tree. And the forest is the huge demographic hill that conservatives, Republicans have to climb. They're up there basically every week that goes by. I used to get invited to Orange County, California, to the Lincoln Club every year or two to go and give a speech to them. Orange County was the bedrock of Reaganite, Republican, conservative California. And every couple of years, I'd go there, and some of the people who used to run the previous event, I'd say, "Oh, you're not on the committee anymore. You're not on the board anymore." "Oh, no, no, no. I'm just, I've put the house up for sale, and I'm moving to Texas. I'm moving to Arizona," or whatever. The demographic flight from California. Now, what's the reaction? So you have a thing where people get excited because the French Laundry incident is one of those trees they talk about on talk radio, cable TV. There's always some exciting tree to talk about. "Oh, look, here's Nancy Pelosi at the hairdressers. Here's Governor Newsom at the French Laundry." That doesn't change. Something like that It's fascinating to junkies who love the horse race, who loves the sports aspect, the sports team. I root for the home team. That has no purchase on most semi-disengaged voters, for whom it's identifying the forest and changing the forest, not getting excited about freaky little misshapen trees that is the real trick. Now, when you look at what happened to Larry Elder, people say, well, you know, the minute Larry Elder became the leading candidate, then it became instead of whether Newsom didn't become the issue, then it became Newsom versus a Californian Trump figure. So it became a normal election in which the normal Democrat is running against the extreme, crazy, right-wing, far-right Trumpian candidate. And they say, well, we should have had a candidate with more bipartisan appeal, like the last recall when we ran that fella Arnold Schwarzenegger. Yeah, that makes sense if you're an asshole who thinks that elections are just like the Super Bowl and it's about winning. But the fact is that winning is only the necessary step to governing. And governing, Schwarzenegger, I'm getting cranky again, I'll calm down. Governing, Schwarzenegger was total crap. He was useless. What difference did he make? What difference would it have made as it, what was the fella called? The guy that Schwarzenegger, Gray Davis, is that it? I don't care. Don't write in to remind me. These guys are unimportant in the scheme of things. What difference did Schwarzenegger make? What difference did it make if he'd never been there? So the clever guys in the Republican Party, well, you shouldn't be running these people like Larry Elder, these extreme ideological people. You should be running someone with bipartisan appeal like Schwarzenegger, because then he can win and it will make no difference if he had never won. It would make no difference in terms of the thrust of California, where it's going, where it's headed. It will make no difference if Arnold Schwarzenegger had never been born. That's the kind of bland, we call him the Terminator. And because we don't know what gubernatorial means, we then call him the Governator. And we all think that's very clever, because who wants to mess with the Terminator? But the Terminator is just some character. He's like, he plays that on screen. All the clever lines are written for him, and he just acts them out. And then it all has to be edited, so you don't notice how flabby he is. And then if the editing doesn't work, you have to CGI it all when he's getting into these kick-ass fights, jumping off buildings. All that's being done by his body doubles. In the end, there's just a big, flabby, nothing of a man who doesn't believe in anything except all the things his chums believe in, like climate change. And so just in the last 24 hours, what we've seen here is, oh, yes, the problem is we really need to get back to electing bipartisan moderate Republicans who make no difference. And if you think California's in crisis, That ain't gonna do it. Andrew says, Premier Jason Kenney, he is the Premier of the Canadian province of Alberta, former Canadian Immigration Minister. I've known him a long, I think it's getting on for 30 years now. Premier Jason Kenney said in July that Alberta is open for good, meaning no more lockdowns or forced masking. He more recently stated very strongly that there would be no vaccine passports. Now, suddenly, lockdowns, masking, and vaccine passports are on. I didn't believe any of his promises then or now, and it seems a large number of people don't believe him either. Jason Kenney has a long history of promising one thing and then doing the exact opposite very soon afterwards. What are your thoughts? Why does he do this? Is he an optimistic fool? Does he promise one thing today, knowing in advance that he will do the opposite tomorrow? Is it a trick to make the electorate drop their guard? Is he trying to mix the pretense of appearing conservative with the perks of being a leftist? Or could it be that he is a complete idiot? Yeah, this is spectacular, because basically this is a guy who said, we're putting the lockdowns away for good. We're locking up lockdowns and throwing away the key. They're not going to be coming back again. We're not going to have vaccine passports. If you want to vote in this Canadian election that's coming up, vote for Maxime Bernier and his People's Party, because healthy politics requires a choice. And in case you haven't noticed it, what's been happening in much of the Western world is that regardless of what kind of government you have, and this is why people are prone to conspiracy theories, because they've all basically followed the same general disposition of procedures for dealing with COVID. And those procedures come from, we follow the science. Well, that's all very well, but the scientists have become horribly politicized. This is really as bad as climate change. And even the ones who aren't active friends with the Bat Lady in Wuhan take their cue from the WHO guidance, and the WHO takes its guidance from China. So it doesn't really, there's been a suspension. I think I had Nigel Farage on Fox News Primetime, or Tucker, when I was hosting a few months back, saying basically, I was saying to Nigel, basically conservative government has been suspended throughout the Western world. And that's why incumbents are well positioned for victory, as Justin is in Ottawa and Monsieur Macron over in France. And the one exception to that is Trump. And that's because Trump, from the moment this, aside from the fact that the election was stolen from him, and aside from the fact that everybody on the planet in the Davos class was determined to get him out, aside from that, Trump was, even when this thing started, when Trump was in those two-hour press conferences every night, he would push back against what some of his so-called scientists were saying on this. So what's happened is we've become trapped in this cycle. We come out of lockdown, the cases tick up, we go back into lockdown, all the rest of it. I look at Sweden, for example, which has one of the lowest death rates per 100,000 from COVID in the Western world, and it hasn't had all the other problems. It hasn't had the teen suicides. It hasn't had the mental health problems. It's just treated COVID as it did the Spanish flu, that it's something that's out there. You have to be prudent. You have to take precautions for. But the precautions you choose to take are all within your control. You know, if there is compelling reason to wear a mask, you don't really need the government to tell you that. Anyone can buy a mask. They have a couple of bucks a piece. You can go around in your mask, blah, 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 blah. It's not something you should really need a government edict on. It should be in the realm of advice. But the point is, Sweden is in a much more psychologically healthy place than Alberta is right now. And I think the Swedes got it right. And it's interesting to me that the Danes have now basically looked at what's happening in Sweden and said, okay. I mean, you know, we're told there's the variants are out there. There's going to be new variants along at any minute and all the rest of it. Okay, we've got the vaccines now. If you want a vaccine, you can get a vaccine. If you want a mask, you can get a mask. But the idea of vaccine passports is, you know, what comes next, because this is, particularly in the United States, which is the world capital of fake ID, you know, where every illegal immigrant has fake ID, where every 18-year-old who fancies getting a beer has got fake ID, you're going to have fake COVID ID. So the vaccine passports won't be reliable, and they're going to have to put the chips in us. And Jason, I think at this sense, it's the ruling class. It's a ruling class mentality that they got backed into this corner last March, and they can't figure out a way to get out of it. George Pereira writes, Mark, thoroughly modern, a.k.a. James Mattoon Scott, seems possessed. This is a reference to Chairman Milley, as they call him now. Do you know another thing I can't stand? I don't want to be cranky, but this habit of turning office into titles. So I was listening to some boob refer to Chairman Milley. Who was it calling him? There's Chairman Milley, because he's chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Chairman Milley. I've said before, I prefer viscounts and marquises to turning every little rinky-dink office into a title. It's truly pathetic. It's part of the reason why, you know, the United States military is a global joke. You can't win a thing abroad and at home you're just corrupt and on the take. I am in favour of, as I said, I'm in favour of blowing up the Pentagon. Just to be clear, I'm not going all Al-Qaeda on you. I'm saying that the government should say we're going to demolish the Pentagon, salt the ground, we're going to fire the Washington generals who can't win anything against the Wuhan Globetrotters. I mean, a completely useless military. If the object of a military is to impose your will around the world and to assist in the imposition of your will around the world and to deter enemy aggression, this body is completely useless. And the Washington generals, this exhibition team that's put up to lose to goat herds with fertilizer in the Hindu Kush, they should all be gotten rid of. But George Perez says, thoroughly modern Milley seems possessed of the idea that he was going to launch military action against China and that it was up to him, the Democrats and the media, to save the world. How can any sane person believe that? Is Trump derangement syndrome that powerful a thing? What had President Trump done that could even have fed such an insane belief? This was at the time, basically between early November and late January, when Trump felt that the election had been stolen from him. And clearly, you know, the election system's a joke and it wouldn't pass muster. And everyone knows it's a joke. The minute anybody from anywhere else sees it up close, they think, what the hell are you doing? So he had a point there. But Milley had got it into his head that Trump was going to launch a war with China to keep himself in office and that he couldn't be trusted with the nuclear football. Perhaps someone could explain this to me. Is it the same nuclear football that gets passed on from president to president, or is it a new nuclear football? Or is this the original 1940s? Nuclear football that Truman had, or did they get a new one every president? I don't see the point. America hasn't used a nuke since 1945. It didn't deter 9/11, did it? Nobody sitting around with Mullah Omar and Osama bin Laden cared a whit about the possibility that America might nuke Afghanistan. They thought about it and they concluded on balance that even if you toppled the Twin Towers in the heart of Lower Manhattan, even if you hit the Pentagon, even if that fourth plane had not come down in a field in Pennsylvania and hit, and instead had gone on to hit the White House or Congress or whatever its intended target was, that Afghanistan wouldn't be nuked. So the deterrent aspect of this nuclear arsenal completely failed. Anyway, I just don't get the point. It seems to me a sham. It seems to me, if it weren't for the fact that real flesh and blood human beings get killed and maimed in these hideous wars, the whole thing is obviously the Potemkin racket of appearing to be a military, projecting military force, while in fact just being a vast military industrial grifter racket. I would be in favour. I part company with the national security right because I don't think there's a point to a national security right when you've failed to win a war in three quarters of a century. Now we have Milley. Milley says, we don't need to worry about this whole Afghan, Iraq scenario anymore because the whole shock and awe thing, which I mentioned in contrast to the French, just using six fighter jets, a couple of companies of men and a few paratroopers. Ah, we do shock and awe, baby. And all the goat herds, every goat herd on the planet knows, aye, the Americans launching shock and awe. All you have to do is just stay in the cave for 72 hours. They do the shock and awe, shock and awe, shock and awe. And then the long, slow bleed of defeat over the next 20 years. So just stay in the cave for 72 hours. I'll tell you when you can come out. It's a joke. Getting cranky. It's a complete joke. Millie embodies the joke with that stupid chest of his full of those diversity ribbons. Now, he calls the Chinese guy and General Lee. You can't have General Lee in Virginia, but you can have a General Lee in Beijing. And he says to General Lee, don't worry. If Trump orders the launching of missiles against China, I'm going to give you a heads up. So you'll know they're coming. So he's not going to have the element of surprise. And he's a hero because he's countermanding Trump. So he's a hero and nobody's interested in the fact that Milley doesn't command anybody. He's not in the chain of command. He has no operational control of any more American soldiers than Gladys Scroggins of 42B Elm Street does. He's an advisor. And that's why all your stupid titles, oh, Chairman Milley, Chairman Milley, oh, Chairman Milley, meet Chairman Xi. Chairman Milley isn't equal in rank to Chairman Xi. Chairman Milley is just like would be a sub-vice chairman to Chairman Xi. He's an advisor. He gives his advice to the people with operational control, such as Trump and the defense secretary. He's an advisor. That's all. He commands nobody. He commands how many battalions has the Pope, as Stalin used to say. Well, how many battalions has Chairman Milley? None. He's an advisor. And yet everyone's going, oh, he did the right thing. Oh, it's so important that the military step in to prevent the elected leaders from implementing their policy. That's how badly it. I said, starting a couple of years ago now, I started referring to this as the post-democratic age. It is one of the huge dangers of a so-called meritocracy. Now, they're not a meritocracy. If you look at Biden, if you look at Blinken, if you look at the guy with the plexiglass visor, who's the defense secretary, these are obviously third-rate people. A third-rate incompetent people, but they have they've told themselves that they're meritocrats. They've been to all the best schools. They don't go to the kind of schools that American presidents used to go to college. Some went to colleges you've never heard of, like Eureka College, where Ronald Reagan went. Now we're basically ruled by people who've all got degrees from Harvard and Yale. They all breed with each other. They all intermarry. And so they resemble medieval royal families of yore in Europe, except that at heart, a prince or a grand duke or whatever knows that it's basically a biological lottery, that he's wound up sitting in the castle, and that fella who's exactly the same age as him and doesn't seem any less brainy than him is a peasant living in a hovel down the hill. In hereditary societies, at a certain level, people know that. Now these people actually, so no one thinks, you know, no one except Harry and Meghan in the royal family think that they're brilliant geniuses. The only ones who think they're geniuses are the ones who opted out of the royal family and got mixed up with all that super woke meritocracy crowd where they think they're brilliant and they can solve the problems of the planet. The Queen doesn't have as inflated a view of herself as Harry and Meghan do. And the problem here is that these guys actually, the reason the post-democratic world is taking hold is because of how these fellas think of themselves. And more to the point, they're cheerleaders. This is what's interesting to me. The people who aren't in the inner circle nevertheless think that the best way to signal that you could be in the inner circle is to express contempt for the masses. So the post-democrat, the idea of a post-democratic world where we're governed in all important matters, and that's what follow the science means. Follow the science is an anti-democratic precept. It doesn't mean Smith has the same right to express his opinion on the war on terror, climate change, Islamic immigration, abortion, as Jones does. What it means is that Jones is the science. Jones is the scientist. He knows about the climate. He knows about the COVID. And therefore, he knows about transgenderism. And therefore, his opinion outweighs all the boobs eating at Chick-fil-A or whatever. That's how these guys think about things. David Maxwell says, a Durham report, the Durham report, the Durham report is coming, would be awesome. News reports say that Durham has allegedly been seen alive and is about to indict somebody that nobody has ever heard of for breaking some arcane rule that nobody knows about. Probably a $100 fine and a retroactive bar from lobbying for 6 months. This is a guy from Perkins Coies, the law firm. He's a partner there, called Sussman, who was basically an Oppo research lawyer for Hillary and is about to be indicted for lying to the FBI. The statute of limitations means, apparently, that this weekend that kicks in. So Durham is supposedly going to be filing this thing in the next few hours. But it's for lying to the FBI, which shouldn't be a crime. So it does nothing. Does nothing for anyone. Doesn't get near. The point is, it's the FBI. The FBI is like the Pentagon. It shouldn't be there. It should be abolished. As we know from this business with the Olympic athletes and the sex predator, as we know from the so-called plot against Governor Whitmer, the FBI is actually committing more crimes than it's solving. So we need to have conservative counsel. You know, I'm bored stiff. And I'd be even more bored because I say, oh, you know, Larry Elder wasn't really red meat enough for me, if I'm honest. You know, because he's in California. But the idea, oh, no, Larry Elder. What we need to do is we need to take Susan Collins and we need to build a factory and just clone Susan Collins's all over the map. And then Republicans will get elected and... And what then? And what then? I'd like a Republican candidate who says the American way of war doesn't work. Everybody on the planet knows that, except Americans, because half the population are opposed to war, don't want any war. And actually a big chunk of that half, if there is a war, they'd like America to lose the war. So they're kind of pleased at what's happened in Afghanistan. And the other half are all rah-rah, thank you for your service, USA, 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 and don't seem to notice that this great bloated military-industrial complex doesn't actually win anything. So I think the conservative position is to say, you know something, what the French did in Mali was pretty effective, a little colonial policing operation nobody ever heard a thing about, and they did it with minimal forces. And they didn't blow the budget over it, and we don't seem to have that kind of capability. So I think I'm running for Senate, and I'm committed to getting rid of the Pentagon and moving the few generals who aren't totally incompetent, who aren't just hack lobbyists in waiting, to an office park in Cleveland, and. I'd like someone to do similar with the FBI, but I'm losing. You know, none of it is about anything important. You know, Millie is a tree, but he's an important tree that exemplifies the border problem of the forest. In that he's saying he's gonna, if the United States goes to war, he wants to tip off the enemy in advance. And everyone's on his side. All the media are on his side. The same media who don't mention that Joe Biden couldn't remember the name of the Australian Prime Minister are all protecting Millie on this. Chris Hall says, "Hi, Mark. It was heartening to watch sporting events this past weekend on the telly, especially Premier League footy matches and the amazing crowds at college football games, complete with boisterous bleep a Joe Biden chants. Given the massive exuberance displayed, can anyone imagine that the Mew variant or murder hornets of some other terror will cause us all to lock up again? Is there a glimmer of hope for normalcy? And don't forget to mention that there's been a recent Bigfoot, a.k.a. John Durham, sighting." I'm not getting too excited to ever, to, however, says Chris. Yeah, these are good signs. I would have even considered that they were a good sign had they occurred like last July or whatever. I think there was clearly in February and March last year, nobody knew what was going on. Nobody knew what was going on. Then a couple of months go by and the world divided into two groups. There were those who said this is a big nothing, and there were those who made it pretty clear that for them, COVID was an opportunity basically to control people. There were people who, for example, a lot of the people who want to lower your carbon footprint are all on board with COVID without end, because they think COVID without end gets you to all the carbon footprint lowering stuff that they want to introduce. So you have a situation where everybody who matters basically has a kind of vested interest in COVID without end. Particularly if you look at this, the Canadian election, for example, what was interesting to me was it vastly empowered the government while at the same time shutting down Her Majesty's loyal opposition. I mean, I think this is true in all parliamentary systems, and the, you know, pseudo legislature of the US Congress is a different matter, but I'd rather not talk about that. But for example, what happened was that government isn't shut down, so the executive branch isn't shut down, but the legislative branch is basically mothballed for the duration. So you have in Canada, you had have like Justin Trudeau standing outside his cottage where he's in quarantine because Sophie picked up a bad case of the COVID when she was over in London. So he's in quarantine and he's basically governing from his cottage, while the loyal opposition, the leader of Her Majesty's loyal opposition, standing up in Parliament and pushing Justin's nonsense down his throat, is nowhere in sight. So it destroys the entire balance of the Westminster system, the balance between government and opposition. So you've had a situation where if you're in office when this thing started, your opponents are greatly diminished and you are bigged up, and you dominate the scene in a way you didn't. It's not just a Westminster thing. If you look at the diminution of Marine Le Pen in France and the comparative bigging up of Macron, something similar has happened under that system. And so I think I actually, you know, to me the point is, when do you actually get seething masses saying, screw you, we're just going to live our lives? And you have the president or the prime minister reduced to the status of Ghani in Kabul, where his writ used to run 200 miles beyond the capital, and it then runs 140 miles, and it then runs 60 miles, and it then runs 12 miles, and eventually he realizes nobody's paying attention to anything he says anymore, because that's what we need. Michael Cavino writes, "Hi, Mark. I see that nearly every conservative radio host is now using the thoroughly modern Millie moniker. when discussing the latest stories about the poor stand-in for George C. Scott from Dr. Strangelove. I hope you're receiving royalties from these folks. Yeah, maybe they are. do you know, I'll tell you, I only did Thoroughly Modern Millie for me because it's a song written by my late friend Sammy Khan and my late acquaintance Jimmy Van Heusen. Sammy used to say that it paid for his divorce. And it's good to have a song that big when you're in that kind of trouble. And Thoroughly Modern Millie, what I love about it, and this is why only I would start this, is because like these sports bros or whatever they call them now, and these morning zoo types, it's not even something that floats across their horizon. I love the song Thoroughly Modern Millie. And Sammy told me he wrote his lyric, every day today is everything today is thoroughly modern. Everything today makes yesterday slow. And he gave it to Jimmy Van Heusen, and Jimmy wrote the tune. And when he came back, Jimmy had put this little figure in the fill between the lyric. Everything today is thoroughly modern. Badalidalidalood. And Sammy had this thing where he couldn't hear notes without wanting to put words on them. So the minute he'd been given this, everything today is thoroughly modern. Meadalidalidalood. Everything today makes yesterday slow. Yabba-dabba-dooba-doob. And so he put, everything today is thoroughly modern. Check your personality. Everything today makes yesterday slow. Metaverse reality. And he put words on the little fills. And so, and then Julie Andrews sang it absolutely marvelously in that picture. And for me, the joke is this big butch general, this like squat fella with his head like a spent bullet, and he's like coming and he's standing there and he's thick and stocky and he's covered in all these ribbons, and the song is screamingly camp. So that's why it's funny. It's funny comparing the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff to a camp song from a camp Julie Andrews movie. And that's something that your sports bros and all the rest, the thing people don't get with parody songs is at the idea at heart, the idea at its heart has to be funny. So you can't do a song or a nickname for Thoroughly Modern Millie from, When Johnny Comes Marching Home or Eye of the Tiger or whatever, because it wouldn't be funny. It's funny. It's the contrast between the camp of the song and the big butch and the big butch general. That's just my advice. And if you're these crappy radio programmers putting on these awful, terribly boring shows, they wouldn't be interested in that. But so I don't know. I'm glad they like the name, but I've moved on. A guy in Hong Kong who calls himself Just a Guy in Hong Kong writes, hey, Mark, just a philosophical question here. What sort of ego does it take to have such a belief in yourself that you seek to rule people by force or threat of incarceration and or violence? That you seek to rule people by force who utterly don't want it. I can cite not just Hong Kong, but also large parts of the United States. To that last part, I personally don't believe the United States is worth keeping together as a union, even if that means handing over the top GDP spot to the People's Republic of China. Thanks. Well, there's a book I used to quote quite a lot called The Size of Nations. And it used to talk about the optimum size of nations, because all the most prosperous places on the planet, if you notice, are actually quite small. They're places like Norway and Switzerland, even smaller like Singapore. And the observation in there was if the United States was as centrally governed as France, it would have broken up 200 years ago. Well, we're now seeing that proposition absolutely tested to its limit, because as Joe Biden has just said over this vaccine business. He doesn't care that there are 50 governors out there. He wants a one-size-fits-all policy across the nation, regardless of whatever different local conditions may be prevailing. Now, you say, just a guy in Hong Kong, what sort of ego does it take to rule people by force when they don't want it? Well, the answer to that is nobody wants to be dictator of Liechtenstein or Andorra. It's not a big enough deal. If you're going to be a dictator, you want to be, for credibility's sake, you want to be a dictator over a vast area like China or the United States or whatever. And no dictator believes they're the bad guy. You know, if you look at Stalin thought he was the good guy. Hitler thought he was the good guy. They don't know that they're the baddie in the movie. They think they're the good guy. They think they're dealing with problematic populations, recalcitrant populations, that they know best what's good for them, and that sometimes these people are just so stupid and uncooperative that they don't realize that. Now, who does that sound like? That sounds like every American cable host on MSNBC and CNN, that the people are the problem. You've got a situation, they look at it this way, that you got to impose vaccine passports on the nation because there's whatever it is, 77 million or whatever the official number is, of people who voted for Trump, and they're just crazy. And they're not going to. And so it starts. It starts with the assumption of superiority. And once you make that superior. Now, here in the US, I mean, that's the great difference between what it does overseas and what it does at home. It can't really impress its will upon goat herds in Helmand province, but it thinks it can do so. It thinks it can do so in the United States. And that's why it was so important to them to win California, it was sufficiently important to them. It would have been a huge setback to say that this guy in California, he doesn't do anything. His kids don't obey daddy's strictures. They're running around without masks. But Daddy Newsom can impose them on the rest of you. And again, it comes back to this idea of the post-democratic world, that our ruling class really lives in such... They live as celebrities in large part now. They have entourages. You can't get near them. They live as... which is a bad thing. They also have the technological advantage, I think, so that they have the inclinations of dictators, or they have the inclinations of medieval, I made this point at length in After America, that the guy sitting there in his palace, what you were doing in your hovel over the hill out of sight, he couldn't really do anything about that. He might hear about it. He might be able to send some dragoons prancing through your dooryard to chastise you about it. But he didn't have real-time information on everything you were doing, which is the, if you think about it, Chinese communism is still with us, Russian communism isn't. If the Russians, if the Soviet Union went belly up 30 years ago, if they just hung on another 5, 6, 7, 8 years until the establishment of the internet, until they'd been able to track emails, until they'd been able to track Amazon transactions, until they'd be able to know every aspect of your life in real time, then they might never have gone belly up. Scott Scherzer says, as today is Yom Kippur, I will be asking God's forgiveness for my sins. Might it be a good idea to have a national holiday for which our elite can atone for their sins? I know one day would not be enough, but it would be a start. Of course, that would open the possibility that they would seek their forgiveness from what they perceive as a higher power, the Chinese Communist Party. Wishing all club members a very happy 5782, says Scott Scherzer of Miami Beach. Happy 5782 to you. Remind me, what was that? 5705? Yeah, 5705. That was 77 years ago. It's a song from my youth. Bad, undistinguished telephone song. There are good telephone songs, but that's not one of them. Yeah, that bit about seeking forgiveness from a higher power, the Chinese Communist Party, that's basically what General Milley was doing. You know, they don't think, you know, it doesn't matter. You know, Andrew Cuomo sleeps well at night. He doesn't think he's caused thousands of deaths from his policies. They don't think they have sins to atone for. They really don't. They really don't. It's a weird thing because we have essentially secular societies. Faith has fled from most of the Western world, and you have empty churches all over Christendom. And you have a ruling class that, in fact, sees itself as the new gods. And that's a big part of the problem there. David Kelly Wood says, Mark, I enjoyed hearing the story behind the most recent song of the week, The Grand and Beautiful God Bless America, and was moved by Irving Berlin's love for his adopted land. But I found myself conjuring images. Not of America extending from the mountains to the prairies to the oceans white with foam, but rather of an America on the ocean white with foam. And rather than hearing God Bless America, the sound of Nearer My God to Thee was forcing its way into my mind. Maybe not so much a question as the thought that these are pretty sad times. Still hopeful that we can right the ship, but not confident as to how. No, I said the other day that all we had to do was resume the norms of prudent statecraft. Doesn't matter what the problem is. At the southern border in Afghanistan with the COVID, the norms of prudent statecraft. And Tal Bachman made a reply that, but to get to be in a position to enforce the norms of prudent statecraft would require this, and to get to be in a position to require this would require that. And it goes back. We've deformed so much of society now that we cannot even, the expectation that our citizen representatives would represent the citizenry is now so absurd. They represent something actually divorced from the citizenry of humdrum nation states. So getting back to that is difficult. Larry Durham says, I know it's going to be all medals, no chess today in the clubland, so I'll sneak in a big bravo for the Prisoner of Windsor. After Animal Farm 1984 and Kafka's Metamorphosis, back-to-back-to-back, and then a slog through the Riddle of the Sands, I needed that. The Prisoner of Windsor was my inversion of The Prisoner of Zenda that we did last summer, in which, in The Prisoner of Zenda, as you know, an English gentleman goes to Ruritania and finds himself obliged to impersonate the King of Ruritania. In The Prisoner of Windsor, set in the 21st century, the rightful king of Ruritania, which is now, you know, a people's republic and all the rest of it, the rightful king of Ruritania finds himself in London and obliged to impersonate the English gentleman who happens to be the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom. So it's a contemporary inversion. People enjoyed it last summer. If you haven't heard it, do check it out. And I hope you like it, because I had great fun doing it. I certainly enjoyed that. What do we have coming up for you? Well, in about 4 hours' time, we have on Serenade Radio the rerun of last Sunday's Stein Song of the Week. That's in the UK at 9 p.m. British Summertime, which is 4 p.m. North American Eastern Time. So if you didn't hear it on Sunday, I hope you'll tune in for that. We have lots of our other features all coming up over the next few days. Thank you so much for sticking with us. I so miss the internet of old. I'm so sick of social media. I'm so sick of what was a liberating medium 20 years ago has now become the medium of total state control. I love the way. And that's by the way, I'm on the side of Nicki Minaj in this whole thing, because I do think I love the way she just slapped down whatever it is, Joy Reid at MSNBC, because the whole, again, it's actually the perfect microcosm. I have no idea of the state of her Trinidadian cousin's friend's testicles, and no great interest in Nicki Minaj's cousin's friend's testicles, but the way the world has risen up as one, woke world has risen up as one to crush her and stamp on her is fascinating me, and that's what it's all about. It's all about the control. Who cares in the end about some Trinidadian guy's testicles? The idea that this is the shot heard round the world, it was in the left testicle of some guy in Trinidad or Tobago. I don't believe that's been established yet. But whether it was a Trinidadian testicle or a Tobago testicle, the idea that this is the shot heard round the world is a brilliant microcosm of what's gone. Oh, she's now off Twitter. She's been booted off Twitter because Jack Dorsey can't. The Trinidadian cousin's friend's testicle is such a threat to the peace of nations that it has to be shut. You have to shut down Nicki Minaj's cousin's friend's testicle to save the planet. You know, in the end, we are all, under this new regime, we are all Nicki Minaj's cousin's friend's testicles. We are just rattling around in a great scrotum being pulled tighter and tighter by Facebook and Twitter and the rest of the woke billionaires. Do give us a listen to 7/8 Song of the Week. It'll cheer you up. I tell you what. Let's end with people seem to like me playing Top Cat after I was all cranky and shouty last week. So here's another one, not quite in the spirited style of Saturday morning cartoons, but definitely a lot of listeners will recognize their own domestic situation in this song. We will see you next time.
I was snoozing on the sofa when she came in from work. She started baby talking and she sure didn't shirk. How's mama's pookie wookie? How's a big sweetie pie? I kinda smiled and I opened one eye. Yeah, mama's gone get lovey-doveys, had a hot day. I was just about to answer her when I heard her say, "You so fat and lazy, but you're sweet as can be." That's when I knew she wasn't looking at me. Oh, oh, I wish she'd talk to me like that. Didn't care where I scratched or sat, and gave me praise for being lazy and fat. But she only talks that way to the cat. Oh, yeah. She only talks that way to the cat. Ba, 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 da, da. And would you look at him? He's just an ugly big ball of fur. It's not as if he even cares a thing about her. He doesn't work. He's never even caught a small mouse, but she treats him like he's king of the house. Sure, I'm a little overweight. I treat her like I don't care. I got laid off of work. I ain't going nowhere. Still, it's a mystery to me. I simply can't understand what she loves in that cat. She can't stand in a man. Oh, I wish she'd talk to me like that. Didn't care where I scratched her sad. And gave me praise for being lazy and fat. But she only talks that way to the cat. Oh yeah, she only talks that way to the cat.
You wish she talked to you like that.
I do.
Didn't care where you scratched or sat.
Why not?
Gave you praise for being lazy and fat.
Yeah right, she only talks that way to the cat. She only talks that way to that big old cat.
Meow.
Oh, shove over.
This is Mark Stein, inviting you to join me for a song of the week by a one-hit wonder whose one hit is kind of wondrous, even though it's full of moon and stars and all the usual flim-flam. But Frank Sinatra and Dinah Shore, Tommy Dorsey and Diana Krall, and hundreds of others like it. And so did the novelist Scott Fitzgerald, although he came very close to wrecking it. It's all coming up on this week's Stein Song of the Week, Sunday afternoon at 5:30.
Mark Stein's Clubland Q&A is a production of Mark Stein Enterprises and Oak Hill Media. All rights reserved.